The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray, how are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
You just patted yourself on the back.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
You're just so great. I love your show.
Am I close?
No.
Does that comfort you?
No.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to confess it, because I'm a holy guy.
I'm a little intimidated to talk to you because you used a lot of big words.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place. You came to the wrong place if you're looking for deep answers.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Intimidating because of a lot of big words, right? Why don't you just excoriate me for my magniloquent shibboleths? Sheesh. Dr. Ray here. Thanks for joining me on The Doctor Is In. This is Look Back Friday. Kind of a parallel phrase to Paul Harvey. Remember Paul Harvey? He'd say, over my shoulder, a backward glance. He was a master of the twist and turn phrases. Wash your ears out with this one. And then when he would talk about folks who had had long-standing marriages, he goes, marriages aren't all slipknots. Had such a beautiful way of saying things. There was only one Paul Harvey. And he had the voice, too. Isn't that amazing? He had one complete package. All righty. Well, what do we do on Look Back Friday? Take previous calls, and they are edited, because Andrew usually gets rid of my initial buttonage with the caller. He gets rid of all that. The caller just sort of jumps into the situation, and then I listen, and I realize there's much more I want to say. There are directions I could go that I don't have a chance to go in. I usually pick one or two of those directions, and I store them up for Look Back Friday. Bottom line is, it's a very selfish program. I want to say more. I didn't get a chance to say more, so now this is my chance to say more, and we'll get to that in a moment. But the opening monologue. I would say approximately 50% of the folks who come into my office who would like guidance in getting their child under better control, and I'm going to say with a kid under 12, at least 50%. It's probably higher than that, I think, but I'm going to just say 50 as a conservative percentage. When I ask what the school people say, usually this is one teacher if it's an elementary child or if it's a kid who's in the sixth grade or so and there are multiple teachers, the parents are surprised. Parents don't get it. They don't understand it. They give me some version of, the school doesn't see any of this. They think he's a delight. And then they usually share with me all the accolades that they got about this kid at their previous conference with the teacher. Generally, I'd say more often than not, they don't get calls from the school saying this kid is a major disruption in the classroom. You got to help us out. Now that does happen, of course. I get that. It's not uncommon, but much of the time. Now, part of the reason for that is it wasn't so much the case when I was at the mental health centers, and we pretty much took anyone who came in the door. At the point where I am now in private practice, I can decide who I wish to see. And I decide who I wish to work with on the basis of certain things I look for in the initial call. And more often than not, I get parents that are cooperative and willing and wanting to do something about the home situation. But they're flummoxed. They don't understand. Why does this kid not do this for the school people? Now, they have ideas on why this doesn't happen, but much of the time they miss it. They'll give me ideas like, well, maybe he just holds it in all day, and then when he gets home, he has to explode. Or they'll say something like, he's probably secure with us. He knows that we will always love him, so he doesn't fear losing our approval. Maybe he fears losing the teacher's approval. That's still not the main one. The main one is this: perception. The reality is the teacher doesn't have a fraction of a parent's authority. Mom and dad have far more leverage over that child's conduct. They can give essays. They can make him go to bed early. They can wipe out dessert. They can just do a ton of things that there is no way a teacher has the prerogative to do, the permission to do, and the flexibility to do. They just don't. If the child realized that, in fact, the teacher didn't, this is especially true with the younger kids, he might push harder. One might say, well, but wait a minute, Dr. Ray. The child doesn't want to embarrass himself in front of 18 peers. Sometimes that's the case, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes, act up, it's kind of cool. Class clown. Recognition. Applause. Neat kid. The main factor is the power of perception. The child perceives that in the role that that teacher has in the school, how the teacher carries him or herself, what they might do to another child in terms of discipline consequence, even though it's very benign, you know, you have to stay in for recess. Whatever it is not so much the reality of authority, it's the perception of authority. And the parents, at some level, have lost that child's perception of their authority. The child doesn't perceive that they can do this. Now, the parent might say, well, how could he not perceive it? We've done these things. He's had to write essays. He's gone to bed early. He's been grounded. I mean, we've put consequences on him that are far more than the teacher would put on him. And I say, yeah, that's true. But this is a game of chance. What are the chances that that's going to happen? Now, in most cases, the chances are low, because we as parents, by and large, hover between maybe 10 and 15% consistency. That's pretty much where we're at. Now, I know people thinking, no, Dr. Ray, come on. No, you gauge it out. Now, I'll do a consistency test at some point down the road here on the program, and then I'll show you, I will prove to you how easy it is to get down to 10 or 15%. That's where most of us operate, because the rest of the time it's just words. So the child over the years has sized up, has perceived that the parent's authority is not what he takes into account. Either they will argue with him, or they will nag him, or they will threaten him, or they will get frustrated with him. All kinds of imposters, all kinds of fraudulent types of authority, rather than real authority, which is, I mean what I say, and I'm going to do something about it. Now, this doesn't mean you're a jackbooted thug. That's another monologue, this whole idea that any kind of discipline is somehow autocratic. It's not the case at all. Matter of fact, I'm digressing now, but as a matter of fact, you don't have discipline, you get mean. That's a natural progression. It's a natural trajectory. I should say it's a natural regression. When you don't have authority, you don't like what you become. You talk the way you don't talk to anybody else in the world. So, in fact, what you want to do is to teach your child to have the perception of you that is authoritative. Think back to your own parents. Now, as a general rule, this is not the case all the time, but it's just a generality. The generation before us had more authority as parents than we do. And there's a lot of reasons for this. But that's kind of the way it was. And definitely their parents had more authority than they did. There's been a steady decline in authority the last couple generations in our culture. Across the board. Cops, teachers, coaches, parents, organizations. So your parent may have had the look. Remember the look? Many clients say to me, all my mom had to do is just look at me. Gave me the look. I stopped. Why? There's no authority in the look. You perceived that the look meant something. You perceived from early on in your childhood that the look had been paired with action. There's going to be some kind of discipline response. And then after a while, all it took was just a look. It's like Pavlov's dogs, you know. You salivated to the bell because the bell got associated with food. After a while, all you had to do is just have the bell, and then you salivated, just like you would with food. Well, it's the same thing with a look. The look had been associated with authority, and the perception of the look was all that was needed anymore. So, to get the perception of authority for your child, you have to assert authority. Calm, quiet, not crazy person authority, just a discipline that is predictable, reasonably consistent, and a follow-through. And then after a while, that child will behave as well for you as he behaves for his teacher. I'm Dr. Ray.
Anybody who goes to a psychoanalyst ought to have his head examined. So let's examine ours.
I just was calling to let you know that you are right.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Pro-life across America, the Billboard people.
I remember when we found out we were expecting you and we were so surprised.
You were?
Yep, but then we heard your heartbeat and knew you were going to change our lives.
Hello, I'm Marian Kuharski, the director of Pro-Life Across America. We know that conversations about right to life have become very heated, even angry. We stay away from that political fray. We're non-political and totally educational. We don't scream or scold. Instead, we help people working through unplanned pregnancies know their options. We're here to help both mom and the baby, and we rely on people like you to help with our mission. Please call 1-800-366-7773. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, or at prolifeacrossamerica.org.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
Pro-life across America, the Billboard people.
You got to pick your sport, you know? I was playing my computer in chess the other day. And I put it on level 1, which I think is the preschool level. And the computer beat me. So the next sport I picked was boxing. Computer had no chance against me in boxing. Dr. A, look back Friday. We take some previous calls from previous shows. Sometimes they're pretty far back. 1991, maybe. I don't know. You'll hear my voice. I sound a lot younger. Sound like I'm in middle school. And then I want to extrapolate. I want to say more about the program. Sherry from Kentucky has a daughter who just doesn't like Sherry's husband.
I actually did get remarried for about 6 years now.
And your daughter is still having trouble with the new fella in your life?
Yes, she sees us as being critical. Like, you know, if, for instance, I don't like them on the internet too much, so I unplug the cord. And my husband's like, you shouldn't have to do that. These kids should be responsible enough not to get on the internet if you tell them not to. And so she hears that and says, they're causing you all kinds of distress. And so she hears that and then starts throwing things at me, you know, like maybe not that day.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Throwing. I thought for a second there, Sherry, You said she was throwing things at you. You didn't say that, did you?
She'll throw her scapular off. Yeah. She'll throw her scapular off and say, I'm not Catholic anymore. And
well,
I'll just break down.
At least she's throwing soft stuff.
You
know? I've never seen anybody knocked out with a scapular, you know. Let me speculate, Sherry. You didn't say this. Let me do a little speculating here. How long were you a single mom with your daughter?
4 or 5 years.
Okay. Now, at that time, it was you raising your daughter with your own discipline, with your own permissive style, if that's what it was, because you felt bad. She had lost her dad. And understandably, you felt, I've got to make life pleasant for her and easy for her as best I can. That's a very common reaction among widowed parents or divorced parents. Is that somewhat on target, or am I off?
Somewhat. She didn't really give me a whole lot of, like, I would say, discipline problems as per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, she would like to tease. She would tease her sisters and things, but you know, like, I've got your this or that, and tease them. But she didn't act out.
Let me then take it to the present, which I see a lot of in remarried situations like yours, which is that your husband, looking at your daughter the last 6 years, thinks that you should be a little more strict. You should be a little more firm about this, and she should be a little more obedient. And he's ill at ease, or he's unsettled by the fact that isn't quite the way he would like it to be. Now, am I okay there? Don't tell me I missed it again. I'm not used to missing it twice. Is that true?
No, you're right. He says I coddle him too much, and she has been a cutter, and she's been depressed, and she cuts. So
now you're scared. You're scared.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't push any buttons.
So she sees your husband as pushing you into being stricter or more firm or having tighter rules than she would want. And it's all his fault. Because if he weren't on the scene, you'd be a lot nicer about this, in her opinion. Am I right again?
She doesn't say that. She doesn't say that in those words. She gets upset and says, I'm sorry. And it's just that she doesn't like men. Dad that died, he was a little abusive. He was abusive. And
you might be over-psychologizing this, saying she doesn't like men, so that's why she's having trouble. Because you said earlier that your husband, her stepdad, is he wants you to be a little more firm about these things. You've got a daughter that's throwing stuff at you. That doesn't tell me she just had a little blip of a fit. It tells me she's a behavior problem for you. So given that, she's 19. Is he saying get her out of here?
He's mentioned that. He's like, well, you know, if she don't keep this up, she's going to have to go. I said, where is she going to go?
See, now, so what, dear, you got a lot of complications here. What exactly are you asking?
I don't know. I just don't know how to handle the situation and be the mom that I know I need to be. And
it would strike me that you and your husband need to get on the same page. You're not.
Mm-hmm.
You're not. And it's probably causing some marriage problems. You sit down with your husband and you say, we've got to decide what we're going to do about this. Ask him, how do you see this? I mean, he's been on the scene for 6 years. How do you see this? Tell me how you see our daughter. And he may say, I see her as an out-of-control young woman. I see her as defiant. I see her as difficult and disrespectful. I see her as quite unpleasant. Now, would he say that?
No, he might see her as, he doesn't like the fact that she like gets upset and throws things, and he doesn't like that.
Okay, I think we're just using different words. Wait a minute, we're just using different words. She wouldn't be disrespectful. She just throws things. I'm glad it's still scapulars, because that's soft. I wouldn't want her to throw something heavy, like an ashtray. So given that, you sit down with him, and you say, what are we going to do about this? Because I can't tell you how to make your daughter behave. You and your husband have to sit down and decide, how are we going to approach this young lady? Because it sounds like she does not like the fact that he has influence over you. You would be a lot more loose if he wasn't around, in your daughter's opinion anyway. And that may be a big factor here. Two themes I wanted to address. The first is a blended family theme where one of the prime reasons for the second breakup is the kids. Commonly, there are great disagreements on how to handle the children who tend to be older, who tend to be more of a behavior problem. And the step-parent is saying, "Boy, this is tough. I'm living with this and I'm seeing this." And especially if the step-parent has never had children. So all they see is this difficult kid at age 9, 12, 15, in this case 19, and think, I don't understand why her parent is allowing this. This is unpleasant. So that's the first theme that emerges a lot. And I strongly suggest to people who are getting into a second relationship after an annulment, you really got to talk this parenting thing out. You got to get inside the other person's head and find out how they perceive. If you've been courting for a while, how do they perceive what this child does, what this child gets away with, how you respond to this child? Get it somewhat sorted out beforehand. That's the first thing. The second large theme is this. Did you hear what Mom said? Where's she going to go? That's probably the number one reason. I call it the fear factor. Probably the number one reason why a parent of a legally adult child, now again, that is a random number of our culture, 18, but nevertheless, it has to be drawn somewhere. And that's actually rather late compared to human history. Most kids were considered somewhat more adult, younger than that, in their family, in their culture, in their tribe. So at age 18, the child is uncooperative, unpleasant, disrespectful, defiant, essentially ignoring parental rules, limits. One of the options a parent has is to ask the child to leave. And the number one reason why a parent won't do that is fear. What will become of the child? Where will they go? What will they do? Who will they hook up with? What kind of life in the near future are they going to have? And I couldn't live with myself if something bad happens. And so here's Sherry, who gets stuff thrown at her. Now, you know there's got to be other stuff. If you got a kid throwing stuff at you, you don't say, "This is really a wonderful, sweetheart, cooperative of a kid." And, oh, by the way, every 9 days they throw the scapular at me. No, there's more. So Sherry is saying, I can't. She's 19. What I see happen a lot is that it doesn't get better. The kid doesn't, quote-unquote, grow up within the parent's home. It gets worse. And it ultimately gets to the point where the parent can't take it anymore and then says, "I can't take it anymore. You're going to have to go." What I've found that makes parents think about this is if they become convinced that in allowing this totally uncooperative child to live in their home after the age of majority, they're not helping the child. See, they think they're helping. They think they're buying time for maturity to kick in. But in fact, it's getting worse. And maturity is not kicking in. So as I've seen it, as I've dealt with so many parents along these lines, indeed, this is the one thing I think that makes them rethink their position of, "I just couldn't do that no matter how bad it gets."
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we loved to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band. And I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church. And I was just a child. But I said, you know, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another. And week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
When and how did Jesus allow some of his apostles to see him in his glory? After entrusting to Peter the keys to govern the house of God, the church, the Lord began to reveal to his followers that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things, including death, but that on the third day he would be raised from that death. It is during this period, according to the Catholic Catechism, that he takes Peter, James, and John up on a high mountain and there unveils his divine glory for a very brief time. His clothing, his face become dazzling with light. He also reveals he must go by way of the cross in Jerusalem to enter his glory. All the Trinity is present for the Transfiguration, the Father in the voice declaring Jesus to be his beloved Son, the Son in Jesus, the Spirit in the cloud that covers Jesus. The Transfiguration gives us a window on Jesus' glorious coming and our own transformation from a lowly body to a glorious body like his. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
A lot of these groups that are violently opposed to using animal skins of any type because that's cruel to the animal, you notice that they are more likely to be opposed to fur rather than leather. It seemed to me it's safer to harass older rich women than it is to harass motorcycle gangs. I don't know, just a thought. That's the thought. Dr. Ray here, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. My Facebook page, love to have you there. We put up a lot of stuff there. We put up monologues, and I just finished cutting about 22 new bits, 1 to 2 minute things on the Facebook page. And the lady who manages my Facebook is a delight, and she's very professional. Always been in marketing a long time, and she's nudging me all along. If she didn't nudge me, I wouldn't have done it. It's been about 3 years now, and she says, you got to do this to help people out. So she tugged on my strings that way. And I have to admit, she's been right all along. She's dragging me like a stone up a hill. My website's drray.com. We got the pop-up for the latest book, the Raising an Upright Child in an Upside-Down World, which really has been percolating in my head for a long time. Because I've just been seeing so many good parents looking at their child as the child enters teen years or young adulthood and say, what happened? Why is my kid like this? Why does my kid think this way? Why is my kid abandoning the church? What is happening? This isn't the way he was raised. And indeed it wasn't. But the book identifies all the factors, not all, but the major factors involved in misshaping a kid right underneath our noses. And I tell you how to resist them and how to deal with them and how to deal with your own self-confidence when you have to walk apart from the parenting crowd. All right. Oh, boy. Used up a lot of time right there. Anonymous caller from Ohio. Her husband eats lunch with his mom. She has a husband who eats lunch at his mother's house every day. Hi, Anonymous. How are you?
Good. How are you, Dr. Ray?
I'm okay. How long have you been married?
6 years, almost.
Has he been eating there every day for 6 years?
Oh, no. He just recently changed jobs into the town where he grew up in, where his parents live still. And so it's just been the past couple weeks.
Okay. Why do you think that is?
Because he loves his mom. You know, he wants to eat lunch with her. So, but we have a lot of, even though we have a very, we have a very good relationship with my in-laws, but I don't know, just, you know, we do many things differently than they did. So, you know, she's a lot of times telling me, you know, suggestions and, you know, for big and small things.
Has she always done that
so
last 6 years?
Yes. Yeah, and I don't know if it's irrational for me being upset or if it's a rational reaction. So
you're afraid that she's going to take those suggestions and ideas, put them into your husband's head, then he's going to bring them home and be opinionated and critical.
Yes, but more than that, I don't even like that she's saying them to him. You know, like I don't even like that there's so much exposure to, you know, opinions that would be against ours.
And do you know this?
I mean,
Does he comes home and you hear it in what he says?
Nope.
So you don't know.
I don't know.
Got a couple
I guess I'm wondering, should I say something to him or should I just leave it to avoid friction?
If you don't think that this couple of weeks here is his chance to have lunch with his mom. Now, is she married?
Yes.
Okay, so she does have a husband. If you don't think that this lunch consistent visit is something that's any kind of problem, he's just doing it because he's finally got a chance to do it, and it will slowly fade out as his life goes back to a different schedule, then look for anything that would indicate he's becoming more critical, he's becoming more opinionated, he's making more comments, and you're hearing his mother's voice. At that point, I would probably then ask him, you never said these things before. Where is this coming from? You're not gonna directly accuse. You're not gonna say, you know, this sounds exactly like your mother. Is she putting these thoughts in your head? Ooh,
right.
Yeah. That'd be straight on, and that would probably get some defensiveness. I just kind of bide my time. And if you haven't noticed anything that's changing, then at this point, it may be okay. Here's the question. Do you think that your husband knows that his mother's opinionated and he said those kind of things and he's not easily going to fall under her spell?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've had conversations about it before.
Right. Then you're okay, I think.
Yeah.
Bide your time.
All right.
See if it changes anything. The danger in marriages is to take a spouse's behavior personally. And I think that our anonymous caller, our young wife, was nervous a little bit that what did this mean that he was doing this every day having lunch with his mom? Now, my guess would be that he'd been, as she talked, out of town or out of state for many years, and now he's got a chance to reconnect, and he wants to do that, and she said he loves his mom. For a while, I probably, as I implied to her, just ride it out. Don't make it look like that it's something that she has to take personally. When I was married, we were young, and I played a lot of softball. I played two leagues and sometimes tournaments, and my wife was wonderful about it. She didn't take it personal. She says, hey, that Ray loves to play softball. That's all he does. He's not doing anything untrustworthy. He's not misusing his time. He loves to play softball. And other women were telling him, there's no way. There's no way I would allow that with my husband. He's not going to do that. It's time to grow up. He's had enough. You have kids now. He needs to be. And my wife didn't look at it that way. She didn't take it personal. She didn't view it as, oh, well, that's a sign that Ray doesn't care for me like he should. And I'll tell you, I am unbelievably, eternally grateful for that woman and her attitude regarding that. And here I am some long, long time later still playing. Not as much, not anywhere near as much. But I think the danger in any marriage is to immediately interpret someone's particular piece of behavior personally. It happens a lot. Why doesn't this person want to be with me more? Why is this person not doing what I asked them to do to pick up their socks? Well, obviously they don't care enough about me to pick up their socks. In any human behavior, there is oftentimes a mix of motives, a lot of motives. And many times it doesn't have anything to do with the other person. In this case, for our young wife, I would caution her just to hold off on being threatened by this, interpreting it as somehow it's some way that he is becoming more attached to his mother than he is to her. Now, I didn't hear that in her voice. I don't think she was saying that. But the temptation is there to have some part of you think that. And for the moment, you hold off. And I think that's generally a good rule in marriages. Don't make your first interpretation be personal.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
We recently filed a federal civil rights lawsuit in Minnesota in which we allege that the city of Bloomington, two city police officers, and the Hennepin County attorney violated our client's constitutional rights. For many years, our client has been documenting the public controversy surrounding the Dar al-Farouk Mosque and its associated school, the Success Academy, which are located in her residential neighborhood. Our client would often film zoning and other violations committed by the mosque and the school that are disruptive to the neighborhood. She would publicly disseminate this information via a blog and Facebook page. She would also bring these violations to the attention of the city, which would largely ignore her concerns and the similar concerns of her neighbors. This past summer, our client was visited on multiple occasions by city police officers and detectives who warned her that patrons of the mosque and school objected to her filming activity and that if she did not stop, she would be subject to prosecution. As the courts have explained, the right to freedom of speech includes efforts to gather evidence and information by photographing and videotaping matters of public interest. Indeed, every news agency in America exercises this right on a daily basis. Here, the city and county seek to make a crime out of what under the Constitution cannot be a crime. Their threats of prosecution are aimed directly at activity protected by the First Amendment. I'm Robert Buse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center's fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
I had a friend come into the office during the break. He said, "What are you up to?" I said, "About 170. Same as my IQ. That's my goal. To have the same weight as an IQ. That's what you want. Be hard to do that because IQ tests don't score that high. They don't do that. They ceiling out. Okay, it's Dr. Ray here. Yeah, I hope I don't lose weight. IQ will drop. Of course, if I gain weight, get up around 205, you know. Let's see what we got here on this Look Back Friday. How about another anonymous caller? I had two callers here, and this is an anonymous caller. She's female, struggling with infertility.
I'm 26. My husband and I have been trying to conceive for almost 2 years, and it's just been a roller coaster. And it's just, there are days where I just, like, tear up at work and just can't, you know, can't manage them or keep it contained. And so I just was wanting your advice on how to manage that and just...
I came home. I was 34 years old. I came home. My wife and I sat in the front room. Both cried, because I had just gotten my second opinion that we would always be infertile. There was no way around it. The condition I had was congenital. It was there from birth. I toyed with suing my mother, but the lawyer told me the statute of limitations was probably out, so I left her with a warning. This better not happen again.
Yeah.
We said, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? My wife always wanted 5 or 6 kids. I said, well, we'll just do our best to adopt, I suppose. Maybe, you know, we'll see what we can. We'll explore the whole adoption area.
Yeah.
We have 10 children. At that time, given my wife's age, given my age, even if everything would have gone well, we probably would have given birth to 3, 4, 5 maybe at the outside.
Mm-hmm.
We have 10. Now, a little easier to adopt in those days than it is now. In those mm-hmm. days, if you didn't care about the race, you could adopt tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's still possible. I'm going to give you a couple mm-hmm. suggestions, honey. One, and I know people will email me on this, so I'll head this off. The John Paul II Institute in Omaha, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They talk about something called the Creighton Method. So you get a hold of them, and they can give you, I think, for the money, the very best stuff on infertility. Mm-hmm. So that's one option you check out. The second thing is 2 years is, yeah, that's a frustrating length of time, but I've seen many people get pregnant after 2 years of trying.
Yeah.
So that's not the end of that story. Three, of course, if you use natural family planning, you can enhance your chances mm-hmm. of getting pregnant during your fertile times, if indeed that's the case. I'm assuming you and your husband have been examined from various angles.
Yes, we do use Creighton and see a Napro doctor. Been doing that stuff for 2 years,
okay.
And my husband's fine. It's me, so it's just
okay. So now let's. I have a book on adoption, sweetheart. Okay, it's called mm-hmm. Adoption: Choosing It, Living It, Loving It. It's on my website bookstore, and I talk about the questions that I get most from people who are looking into adoption. In terms of their concerns, things like, can I love this child as much as I could love a child that's biologically mine? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or what about my grandmother? My grandmother might not accept an African-American infant, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So those questions are in that book.
Like, how do you deal with just, like, the emotional side effects of it? Like, before you and your wife found out about your condition, I mean, how do you get through those times without, like, just being jealous of others or just...
Yes, I know that.
That sort of thing.
That didn't hit me that hard. I guess maybe it's sort of my temperament, which is mm-hmm. I was so grateful for so many other things that I had and for my wife that I wasn't going to say, oh, gosh, I really, really got ripped off. Oh, gosh, here I am wanting so many kids and this happens. Boy, how unfair mm-hmm. is that? I didn't dwell on that. I didn't at all. And I saw other people and their kids, and I was happy for them. Mm-hmm. I just kept focused on, dear Lord, you got to help me out here. We want to have some kids. I need the tax deductions. how are we going to do this? And we just started exploring. We truly did. I didn't dwell on the whole unfairness of it all. Because who am I to demand that God give me children the way that I want them? And I always kept reminding myself of that. Look Back Friday is not always a comforting show for me. First of all, when you listen to yourself, when you have to analyze yourself, be it you see yourself on a video, you listen to a recording of yourself, typically it's been said we are our biggest critics. When I was in grad school, we used to have to listen to therapy sessions with a supervisor, and the supervisor would give you feedback. And even though I knew then that they'd been in the business a long time and I was just a young upstart, it still was not an easy thing to do. And there is still a lot of that left when I listen to a look back call. I critique the words I used. I critique the inarticulateness the repetitiveness of it. I critique that I could have been misunderstood in something I said, and I just realized in listening to this young wife's call, I didn't really answer her question. She was far more concerned about how do I deal with the sense of loss that I'm experiencing. How do I adjust my expectations? Because I just thought that the natural part of being married was then to move on to have children. And I'm looking all around me watching other people do this. And I spent probably more time on her option of adoption than anything else. And in a way, I was fulfilling the men are from Mars, women are from Venus mentality, which is, well, here, I'll give you a solution, a possible solution to your problem. When in fact, and she said it more than once, she said, what do I do about these feelings? And I think if I'd have been a little more sensitive, I would have realized that was her main question. And I could have shared with her what my wife shared with me, which is my wife went through a period of mourning. She mourned for the children that at that time she thought she would never have. And she shared that with me a number of times way back. And I think that in talking to this young wife, I should have heard that. Instead, I was so intent on giving her a solution to her situation to help her feel better. When, okay, yeah, I got the impression she was going to do that anyway, but she was really asking, how do I deal with these feelings of... I touched upon it toward the end, the inequity of it all, the unfairness. Here's a young lady who so desperately wants children, and perhaps she looks all around her and she sees people who don't appreciate their children, or she sees children in broken up pathological families, and she's thinking to herself, what kind of fairness is this? That's part of it. I think part of it was the feeling that this may never happen. So I don't have a whole lot more to say about that call, except that I think I didn't really prioritize what she was saying. And that, my dear friends, is why I don't necessarily like to always listen to what I sound like.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray here. My newest book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside-Down World, help you stand strong against a culture no longer on your side to identify all of the forces trying to misshape your child, to help you stand strong against those forces, to resist them, to recognize them so you can raise the kind of kid you wish to raise. You can get the new book at AveMariaRadio.net. That is AveMariaRadio.net.
Did you know you were kicking in your mommy's tummy before you were born?
We were?
Yep. I just learned at school that babies move and kick before they're even born.
No wonder we're so good at soccer.
Hello, I'm Marian Kuharski, the director of Pro-Life Across America. We know that conversations about right to life have become very heated, even angry. We stay away from that political fray. We're non-political and totally educational. We don't scream or scold. Instead, we help people working through unplanned pregnancies know their options. We're here to help both mom and the baby, and we rely on people like you to help with our mission. Please call 1-800-366-7773. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, or at ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
Pro Life Across America, the Billboard people.
look back call that I have in the queue there is at 5:20. And given that we have about 4 minutes left in the program, doing the math, not only does that not give us time to take the call, it doesn't give me time to say a word, which might be good. Nevertheless, a couple things I want to say about the previous situation on a tangential way. A statistic I saw some years ago, I don't know what the statistics are now. 1 million couples, approximately, in the U.S., would like to adopt, are waiting to adopt. Approximately 50,000 infants are available for adoption each year. Do the math. 5% each year. Why is this? I don't know why our previous caller was having problems with fertility. I have no idea. However, I also saw a statistic, which is, given our medical advancements, given our nutrition, given our overall health, this should not be. It is going in the reverse direction. And that is, approximately 1 in 6 couples now have trouble conceiving. 1 in 6. That's sky high. Why, in a culture where medically we're progressing all over the place, is this happening? This is kind of a reversal of human history. A lot of reasons have been cited for this. One, prolonged use of the pill prior to. There is evidence that suggests prolonged use of the pill can, in fact, make it harder to conceive if and when the person discontinues the pill. Venereal diseases. They leave scar tissue. They cause all kinds of reproductive problems. There are dozens of them out there now. That's a factor. 3, age. Now, this young caller, she sounded young, and she said to be married 6 years, so I have no idea how old she is. But the marriage age for men and women has really, really moved up. I think men now, it's somewhere between 28 and 30, first-time marriage. Women, it's 24 to 27. You know, this is much later in life than it has been for quite a while. It ebbs and flows, but last several decades, it's been creeping up. With age becomes a little more problems getting pregnant. Abortion. Yeah, there's indication that indicates if a woman has had an abortion, this could affect her chances of getting pregnant in the future. Now, it doesn't eliminate them, but it makes it a factor. All of these things are coming into play. And many, many women who have chosen to have careers and have decided at some point in their 30s, mid-late 30s, they would like to have a child, are finding themselves having a hard time. Their body's older. They've been on the pill for a long time. Who knows all the factors involved? So, indeed, all of these things are coming together to create a lot more folks in the situation like our previous caller, which is, I so much wanted to have children, and it's not happening. And it sounds like she's doing pretty much everything she can do to make it possible. Now, for just about everybody who is not a faithful Catholic who adheres to the church's teachings, they will try in vitro. Unfortunately, not only is it going gravely against church teaching, it also means there's a whole bunch of fertilized eggs that are just sort of left to be in suspended animation until they're gotten rid of. So you got a whole bunch of really, really, really early abortions going on. Many people don't know this. I know friends of mine, people I know who are evangelical type Christians in their tradition. They see absolutely nothing wrong with in vitro, okay, because they don't have the moral teaching, the authority of the church. But that's happening too. So all kinds of things entering into the whole infertility picture. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I thank Andrew Krucek, my producer man, for his editing. Unfortunately, he edits me out most of the time, but it's always a tug and pull. Good to have you with me. Walk with God. Hold your kids tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.